In the 1970s, a future, top-notch podcasting team was born, and then raised on military bases because their dads were in the Air Force. These Gen Xers eventually grew up and were unleashed upon the world. Today, looking forward to retirement, they survive by dishing out their opinions. If you have questions that need answers and an open mind, if you can spare 60 minutes a week, and if you have internet access, maybe you can listen to Kenyetta and Jack Save the World.
Welcome to the best little potpourri grassroots low-key podcast you have ever heard. And not the podcast that's hosted by that doctor from Stanford who apparently has really shitty regard for women. Hey, listening friends, welcome back. It's another episode of Kenyetta and Jack Save the World. In our never-ending quest, we shall once again ask you to join us and indulge us for 60-ish minutes of whatever we want, because it's our podcast.
That is true.
Hi, Jack.
Hey. Hey.
Did you know how I was talking about with the Stanford doctor who has really...
I haven't heard that one yet. So I was... You need to enlighten me real quick before we get into our WTFs.
So I'd never heard of this guy. Apparently he has a huge podcast following. His name is Andrew Huberman. He's a doctor at Stanford. I think it's neuropsychology or something like that. He's a doctor of. And they dropped this article, was it yesterday, today? I think it was yesterday, about some goings on in his personal life. And apparently, what do they call him? One favorable comment on the article was like a pseudoscience bro. Which he legit is a doctor, but he talks about a lot of medical related issues that are outside his purvey, which, I mean, a lot of medical doctors do, but then he gives supposedly like life advice, as in go outside every morning for 10 minutes and stand in the sun. Okay. I mean,
that's what vitamin D is for.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was like, it's vitamin D. If you feel better when you go do that, get your vitamin D checked. I'm pretty sure that's what that is. But anyway, I had never heard of the guy, and I almost went and listened to an episode today, and I said, I don't feel like it. So I still might, just because. But yeah, this article was very, very interesting. There was at least six women who managed to find each other through circumstance and social media and such, and realized they had all overlapped in dating this man in roughly an 8 to 10 year span. Mm. And he'd get into arguments or disagreements, and he would like use like weird pseudo therapy talk to calm him down. It was so strange, some of the stuff that he was supposedly texting and saying to these women. It was just wild. Oh, here we go. Healthy merging. That's what he's talking about as far as a relationship. Healthy merging. What is that?
That I'm sorry. That's just stupid. Anyway.
Healthy merging. That's like when old girl was set of Gwyneth Paltrow back when she got the divorce, talking about some conscious uncoupling. I'm like, excuse me? Oh, what? Anyway, so the article's in New York Magazine, the Intelligencer subsection or whatever, and it's free for everybody for a limited time. So if you get a chance, read it. It's very interesting. Oh, yeah, here we go. Here's a quote. According to this one ex-girlfriend, she had two kids from a previous relationship. She says he told her that being with her was like bobbing for apples and feces.
That, my God.
And then he says to her, quote, the pattern of your 11 years, while rooted in subconscious drives, creates a nearly impossible set of hurdles for us. You have to change.
Wow. Narcissist gaslighter much?
You have to read the whole thing. I'm telling you, you're just going to bust out laughing. Like, the dude is unbelievable. And, like, not everybody, it's just not women, like, other associates and stuff that he's screwed over, and it seems like they don't want to say anything bad about him. It's so strange.
That is weird.
But anyway, that's that guy. So I just learned about him today. I don't know. If I'm in the mood, maybe I'll listen to an episode or two. We'll see.
He but sounds like a great guy.
Yeah, he does. He's been on everybody else's pods and he has all sorts of guests, but he likes to reference medical articles that aren't widespread or have, you know, predominantly backed research, shit like that. Anyway, so yeah, there's that guy.
All right.
So without any further ado, we'll get to the W's, T's, F's, Z's. Yeah, that part.
That's just lovely.
That just blew your wig back, didn't it?
It did. My toupee is hanging on, just barely hanging on after hearing that.
It's probably better than, oh, never mind. Okay.
Speaking of toupees, did you see the Deadpool 3 trailer?
I have not. Oh, no, I haven't yet.
You need to watch it because it opens up with Wade Wilson wearing the most god-awful toupee wig thing that you could possibly imagine. It's so perfect.
Well, I guess it's character. Because, as I'm saying, I guess it would have to be Wade Wilson because he has a very weird sense of humor. So, yes. Yeah, okay, I'm going to go watch it. Because old boy's in it.
Oh, Jackman. Yeah, Hugh Jackman, all of those. It's spectacularly awesome.
All
in its badness.
All right. That is good news. Okay.
He leaned into it.
Okay. I'm going to look into it when we get done. Because I love the first two.
Oh, yeah. Like,
those were entertaining beyond words. So, yeah, definitely. Okay. I'm going to put it on the list.
Alrighty.
All righty.
There we go.
I think I'm first. I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So, despite all the stuff going on this week, I'm just gonna throw a prayer up because we all need it. You know how you go to therapy? People say you go to therapy to learn how to deal with all the other people in your life. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to learn how to deal with all these people that are in our lives that we don't want. Anyway, instead of focusing on that, I decided to find something a little lighthearted today. Has a happy ending.
All right.
This is from a March 6th this year article from Associated Press. A Kentucky couple who bought a lottery ticket back last November 2023 realized they had won $50,000, but they couldn't find the ticket. So the husband, Mark Perdue, says the owner at a local corner store called AM Express congratulated him when he walked into the store. And he says, "For what?" And the owner says, "You won the lottery." And he came back and said, "I wish." She said, "No, you did. I have you on video." And then so him and the wife looked and they looked and they looked for the ticket and they thought they may have thrown it away. And they're screaming inside.
I could see why. 50K is a big chunk of money to lose out on.
So last month, he goes into, he owns a company, and he goes to the company car, sits outside the house. And somebody needed it. He goes to check on the condition in the car. And he needed it because a visitor from another plant, I'm not sure what kind of business he's in, but a visitor from another plant was in town and you needed to use a company vehicle. So he's cleaning it out. There's the ticket.
Yay.
Quote, "I don't know how long it might have sat out there if I hadn't needed the car. I was shaking a little bit." He told his wife, and the next day they went to lottery headquarters where they received a check fifth for $36,000 after taxes. And they said they plan to pay off bills and may take a trip. Good for them.
Yeah, good for them. Definitely good for them. I'm glad they found the ticket.
I am too. And I'm glad somebody's having happy endings and somebody is reporting on it. Because people have happy endings every day, but all we hear is the bullshit. So
That is true.
I wanted to throw a happy story out there. So yay to the produce.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll definitely be the, what is it? Yin to my yang. What is that? Yin yang, whatever the opposite thing, you know, I completely screwed that up and now I sound like a complete dumbass.
Not really. I mean, I have other things to say about the state of Kentucky, but at least the Purdue's I'm happy for. So.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Good for them. Good for them.
That's what I got. A little tiny ray of sunshine in this nuclear winter. Oh, hey, what do you got?
Speaking of nuclear winters. Mm. No, and not rays of sunshine. Perhaps I should have went first so you could have brightened the mood. John Fullerton MacArthur Jr. is an American pastor who has a huge presence in the evangelical world, a massive presence. His church has a seminary. He's a mega church pastor, Grace Community Church, which is in Sun Valley, California. It has, I believe, well over 1,000 people that attend it. His seminary is one of those things that lots of people want to go to. Big deal in the evangelical community. Mm-hmm. Big deal. Now, what I'm about to share is apparently several years old, but I still felt that this was worth getting out there. So if I could have roughly a minute and a half of everybody's time, I'm going to play this bad boy.
It is a little strange that we have such an aversion to slavery. Because historically there have been abuses. You know, there have been abuses in marriage. We don't have an aversion to marriage, particularly, because there have been abuses. So to throw out slavery as a concept simply because there have been abuses, I think, is to miss the point. In any kind of human relationship, there can be abuses. There can also be benefits. For many people, poor people, perhaps people who weren't educated, perhaps people who had no other opportunity, working for a gentle, caring, loving master was the best of all possible worlds. If you had the right master, everything was taken care of. So we have to go back and take a more honest look at slavery and understand that God has, in a sense, legitimized it when it's handled correctly. Slavery is not objectionable if you have the right master. It's the perfect scenario.
The perfect scenario. And I'm pretty sure that when he was saying the uneducated, what he meant to say was more than likely, I'm going with 98% black people. Any church throughout the U.S., because he sells, you know, material for churches to use and all of that stuff for smaller churches, and that's frequent in the, you know, in the church world. Bigger churches produce stuff. They have the money to do it. Smaller churches buy the rights or whatever, you know, use it Sunday school, all of that stuff, which is fine. Makes perfect sense if you don't have the resources to do that. There are thousands of churches across the USA that use his material. His books sell a ton. If your church has any of his material, that's what you're supporting. You're endorsing it. Now it looks like I blew your wig off.
He said that with so much certainty. Like he's thought about it a really long time, and it's a whole philosophy that he's, you know, convinced is true. I don't, despite being surrounded by evidence to the contrary. I'm tired. I'm so tired of these people.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
I saw that and I'm just like, why isn't this like a huge thing? You know what I mean?
Because it's all that kind of, all those dog whistles and all that BS. It's like being normalized now.
A kind, loving master.
You gotta be kidding me.
What? You know, there are abuses in marriage, but we don't have an aversion to marriage.
It's not. And I'm pretty sure he thinks a wife is her husband's property.
Well, he does.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, I know that one.
His church actually they had a staff member that was molesting his daughter. The daughter told the one of the associate pastors, and so they ended up, big thing happens. But they prayed over the dad, and he admitted that, he was wrong. But now the Spirit of the Lord had come over him, and he was not going to do it anymore. So fast forward, that was somewhere between 2000, 2010, somewhere in there. Fast forward to now, lo and behold, he gets busted molesting other children. Shocker, I know.
Absolutely not.
And so the daughter's story comes out, and all of this, and things that she was told wasn't true, that they had done, all this crap. Anyway, guy goes to jail, for being a child molester. His wife, who's only finding out about this stuff, wants to divorce him. Big shocker. So what does the church do? John MacArthur, from the pulpit, calls her out and excommunicates her from the church for the sin of divorce, because her husband asked for forgiveness from God, and if God can forgive him, she should be able to as well, and she should have stayed married, because marriage is eternal.
I cannot with these people. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's just proof. The world hates women and children. I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's not even his views on. He has one white guy that you do not have to worry about taking Martin Luther King Jr. out of context in, January and February and quoting him, because according to him, Martin Luther King Jr. was not a true Christian.
Oh yeah, he was a communist. That's right.
I don't even think it was that. He just was like a Satanist that was just wrapped up as a,
Oh yeah, minister. We all know it.
Wanting peace. But based on his views on slavery, it doesn't surprise me that he doesn't like Martin Luther King Jr. So
maybe he felt like had Dr. King had a better man. Never mind. Right. I'm not even indulging it. Sure he sat up many nights in his pastor's study thinking of all the most disrespectful garbage he can spew and say he's just saying the truth in service to the Lord. Okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So there you go. If you're listening and anybody in your family has any of his books, you might want to talk him into throwing that crap away. If your church has any of his materials, you might want to talk to them about not using them, because you're endorsing his views on slavery.
Phew. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Oh, I cannot. Whew. Guys, all of this garbage is so normalized. It's crazy.
And yet I was still able to almost make you speechless.
I mean, you did. I have nothing. I can't I can't say anything that hasn't already been said. It's a pathology. I don't understand how we're sitting here in Tracy Chapman's internet in the year of our Lord, and people are still saying stuff like this, and people are still buying it. Like, this, the world is a ghetto. I'm sorry.
I know.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I got nothing. You did your job.
All right.
I got nothing. Just mark this date. Mark this date.
There we go. Title for the episode.
Mark this date.
Finally, Kenyatta is speechless. Mark this date.
We might can count them on one hand, maybe. But for this year, this might be the first time. So yeah. Make a note.
In the description, the one thing you don't want in an audio format, speechlessness.
I'm going to put that in the description. And one of a handful of times where I'm struck speechless. Good God Almighty. Whew.
Yeah. All right.
As I say, while I'm grinning with all of my natural teeth still left, the world is a hellscape.
They are there.
Oh boy. All right. So, listening friends, this week our main topic, it was intended to be in last month's Music of March. And the topics, we had no problem doing what we did. We hope you enjoyed them. This is kind of a leftover of and kind of flows into other topics. And people in our generation, Gen Xers, will remember this story vividly. But I will retell it here, and then we'll talk about it. So picture it. Germany. 1988. Two young men meet each other. Both have aspirations and dreams of success and popularity. They meet another guy who promises them all this and more. They got all that and more. And then it all went straight to the nearest hell. I'm talking about the pop sensation Milli Vanilli. Give you a little background on the two young men that made up this group. And for those who aren't Gen Xers and maybe a little bit younger, this may be a new story to you because in the years since, it's kind of faded from sight. There was actually a documentary that came out about them. Well, there's been a couple, but the latest one came out last fall. I had that on my list. So, but here's some background about those two young men. Robert Pilatus, I believe that's how you say his last name. He's from Munich, Germany. He was born June 8th, either 1964 or 65. Unfortunately, I don't have a specific date because, unfortunately, he was given up for adoption upon birth. His father was Black, his mother German. I'm going to assume that there were probably some societal taboos there. And that's horrible, but he was adopted about 4 years old into a German family. That family life was not happy, so he broke out. He said, I'm leaving, and I'm going to go do something else. So he takes off, ends up in the States for a while. He meets Fabrice Maxime Sylvain Morvan, who was born May 14th, 1966, in Paris, to Guadeloupean parents. He moved to Germany at 18. Then he ended up in the States, and this is where he and Rob met. They later on met again in Munich, and they bonded over their experiences growing up in Europe because oftentimes, especially in the circles they ran in, because they were both dancers and they enjoyed their music, a lot of circles they ran in, there weren't too many Black folks in those circles. It's fair. There in Munich, they both attempted to find work as backup singers. And then they formed their own act and recorded an album for a small German label that sold a few thousand records. But despite this, they did struggle financially and at some point lived in a housing project. Somebody overheard this little album. A German music producer by the name of Frank Farian, who was born Franz Reuther in 1941. This guy had been into music for some years and had sang on his own with a couple of groups and then put other groups together. Milli Vanilli was not his first project. He actually put together a group that was called Boney M. You ever heard of them?
I have not.
So this is my side story. When I did my research, this is when I found out that this popular, it was like a video snippet that was going around a couple of years ago. And it showed a group doing a live performance of one Black man and I think two or three Black ladies. And the women were singing. The Black guy was over there dancing as though he's being electrocuted while standing upright. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's hilarious. And it was like a joke going around saying, and the caption was, when you and your sisters want to form a band, and then your mama says, bring your little brother along. Anyway, I found out this was Boney M. when I did this research. because the song that they're singing in that particular concert is called Daddy Cool. Go figure. This is that song. And it's gonna, when I tell you why this is interesting, you'll understand.
What about Daddy Cool?
That was Boney M., the black guy that you just saw, whose name is Bobby Farrell, did no singing on any of the records. It was actually Frank Farian that you heard.
Interesting.
So all these, the women did do their own singing, but the black guy, and you saw him jumping around as though he, you know, he was an electrocuted frog. Bless his heart. He was not singing. This was Frank Farian singing.
And I
What
would
was
just like to throw out that he is wearing reject clothes from Earth, Wind, and Fire from the late 70s.
I mean, it was that time. It was that time
And, he
in
did
how
not wear
music
it as
used.
well
No, he
as
did
Earth,
not.
Wind, and Fire did.
He did not. And the two ladies singing were Liz Mitchell and Marsha Barrett. In addition to that song you just heard, Daddy Cool, they also had Baby, Do You Want to Bump? And a song called Rasputin. Yes, about the Russian guy. You ought to hear it. I might have should have played that one because that was even more interesting. So anyway, I back up a couple of steps. Farian, one of the groups that he was in, some of those members, well, he produced one of the groups, and one of the groups is called Far Corporation. And some of the members, when that band disbanded, went on to put together the group Toto. Why is Toto all over the place in music history? What is happening?
Right? That is so wild.
Anyway, Farian hears Robin Fab's album. He said, hey, I can make y'all rich and famous. What do you say? They're excited. They're broke. They want to make it. They want to earn some money. They signed a contract. They didn't read it. That's not unusual, unfortunately, for a lot of singers,
Yeah.
especially when success seems to be slipping through their fingers and they're on their last feet and they're getting ready to give up and go home or just, you know, give up their dreams altogether.
Right.
They sign it on the dotted line, boom, boom, boom. What they found out in a short time is that he just wanted them to lip sync over songs sung by somebody else. And
Right.
he was more interested in the way they look and their dancing than whatever musical skills they may have had. Considering the fact that they had just signed on the dotted line and they did not want to get in trouble for breaking a contract, they went along with it. Go figure. Farian gave his new group the name Milli Vanilli. With Millie, Milli, taken from the nickname of his then girlfriend, Ingrid Sethic, I think that's how you pronounce it. And Vanilli added to sound like the British band Skritti Piliti, who I liked. So, and they signed this contract at the beginning of '88. By May of that year, they were on tour going to Spain, France, Italy, lip syncing to pre-recorded tracks. Dressed in the spandex shorts and the boots and the cornrow hair extensions. Ooh, that was a look. So all this time they're pestering him. When are we going to be able to, you know, sing or, you know, contribute in some way? He's saying, oh yeah, you get to do it in a little bit. You get to do it in a little bit. Even though he's telling them that, he just went ahead and wrote all the songs for the rest of the album. Go figure. But the singers that Farian actually hired to do the singing There were three guys. Charles Shaw, he was born July 4th, 1960, from Houston, Texas. He was paid $6,000 apparently by Farian to do the rap on the first single from the album, but he ended up being fired because Farian thought he was going to snitch. He did snitch. Later on the next year that he was one of the singers, and apparently Farian paid him $150,000 to be quiet. Didn't work. He got fired. Go figure. John Davis, born August 31st, 1954 in South Carolina, he was hired to do singing and only realized afterwards that his voice was going to be lip-synced over by somebody else. He actually did the vocals that were attributed to Pilatus. So he did the actual singing for that member of Milli Vanilli with the face that you saw. After Milli Vanilli disbanded, and that story I'll get to here shortly, he and the other actual singer on the album got together and formed their own group called The Real Milli Vanilli and released one album called The Moment of Truth. He, Mr. Davis, and Morvan actually performed together in 2015 on German television. Interesting. The other fellow that actually did the singing was a fellow by the name of Brad Howell. He was also a keyboardist, pianist, composer, and his vocals were credited to Pilatus. So Davis and Howell were the actual men doing the singing. Rob and Fab just showed up. Everybody knew. Okay. And keep in mind, I'll say this and just keep this in mind. They were signed to Arista Records. Everybody knew. And then when things came out, all of a sudden, nobody knew. Go figure. So, as I
Shocker.
meant, shocker. As I mentioned, Farian, he wrote the rest of the album and he called it All or Nothing. It was released in Europe in November 1988. And to keep Fab and Rob quiet, because they were still grumbling, he gave them $20,000 apiece. They renamed the album Girl, You Know It's True and released it in the United States in March 1989. And the first single, called Girl, You Know It's True, dropped in the States and it blew up like nobody's business. That album had five release singles, all of which hit the Billboard Hot 100 in the top five. The album went six times platinum, spent 7 weeks at the top of the Billboard 200, 41 weeks in the top 10, and 78 weeks in the charts overall. Here's the interesting part. The European version of the album actually lists credits for Shaw, Charles Shaw, the guy who pretty much got fired, and other vocalists, but does not list Robert Fab. Only the American version lists them as actually being the singers. Go figure.
Interesting.
But when the album dropped and they started hitting it big and they were doing interviews, it was very noticeable that the two young men had trouble speaking English and they had very heavy accents, which made some people question, maybe not loud enough, whether or not they had actually sang. But it wasn't being made a big deal at this point. MTV, you remember that channel, music television?
I do. It's fleetingly, I kind of remember him.
Do you remember they used to do the Club MTV tours? Okay, so the Club MTV tour in July of 89 included Was Not Was, Paula Abdul, Tone Loc, and Milli Vanilli. I remember all of them. It's ridiculous. I can't remember the song that Was Not Was sang, though. I'll remember it later. So during this tour, at a stop at the Lake Compounds theme park in Bristol, Connecticut on July 21st, they're doing a live performance. Milli Vanilli's on stage. And as they perform, a hard drive issue causes the pre-recording of the song Girl to jam and skip, repeatedly playing the partial line, Girl, you know it's, girl, you know it's, girl, you know it's. And then right then, they freaked out. From Pilatus, quote, I knew right then and there it was the beginning of the end for Milli Vanilli, and he ran off the stage. Downtown Julie Brown. Remember Downtown Julie Brown?
I do. She was my
She
favorite, Julie Brown.
yeah, there was two Julie Browns.
There was.
She was the host of the tour, and she managed to talk him back on the stage, and they finished the show. People were grumbling, but it still wasn't loud enough. This is how we know it wasn't loud enough. February 21st, 1990, at the 32nd Grammy Awards, Milli Vanilli won Best New Artist, and later on won three American Music Awards.
Yeah.
Surprisingly enough, Rolling Stone hated them and the album. They're still grumbling, though. They're trying to get their producer to let them sing or contribute some kind of way on this next album. They were pushing him, they were pushing him, they were pushing him. Finally, he blows their own spot up. And later in the year, November 14th, 1990, Farian pops up on a press conference and says, "They're imposters. I fired them." Which really, you don't have to read too far in between the lines to know this. I think he believed that they were going to end up snitching, and he did it first to make him,
Right.
yeah, to make himself look unaccountable. But I'm not sure how he thought he was going to look unaccountable. He's their producer. How would he not know?
Right. Big, oh my God, that wasn't them singing. I had no idea.
Farian and all the executives at Arista, including the founder Clive Davis, pretty much got little to no heat at all. The very next week, the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences, where is my English today? They took back their Grammy and said, nah. And that's actually the first and only time to date they have ever taken a Grammy back. Robin Fabb gave a press conference November 20th, and willingly gave up the Grammy. And their intent was to actually sing at the press conference.
Right.
They said, quote, they had made a deal with the devil, and they did some singing. They could sing, but it didn't necessarily sound like the album. But there was some talent there. Didn't matter. People were outraged. Torches and pitchforks stormed the castle. The next year, people started filing lawsuits. I bought this record. I bought this cassette tape. I bought a ticket to their concert. I want my money back. Several lawsuits tried to get through the courts and got dismissed. Finally, in August of 91, a lawsuit was approved and refunded folks who had gone to their concert and had bought either albums or cassettes or 45 singles. That was a thing.
Yeah, good old 45s.
An estimated 10 million buyers were eligible to claim a refund, and they could keep the albums if they wanted to. A lot of people did not. A lot of people, video themselves breaking them up and tossing them in the trash.
As one does.
These young men took so much heat. And mind you, they were only 21 and 25 at the time, young. They weren't getting anywhere in Germany, obviously. They moved to Los Angeles in 91 and signed with the Josh Entertainment Group. Someone by the name of Sandy Galen was their manager, and under this this label, they recorded the album Rob and Fab, and released it was released in 1993. Almost all the songs were written by Fab and a fella named Kenny Taylor, while Rob and Fab did indeed provide the lead vocals. So
Right. I remember when that came out, actually, strangely enough.
due to financial constraints, they were only able to release it in the United States. And one single called We Can Get It On wasn't made available for radio play shortly before, but lack of publicity, poor distribution, and of course, the bad press didn't do them any favors, and it only sold about 2,000 copies. Yeah, when I stop and think about how badly these boys wanted to make it, like they were willing to, like they said, sign a deal with the devil, thinking that somewhere down the road they were actually going to be able to do what they wanted to do, and realizing that they got caught up with somebody that was never going to let that happen. And this producer, Farian, as you heard, this was not the first time that he had signed
Done
on
it.
black folks to be able to produce a group and to make him money. This is not the first time. Like, what?
Yeah.
If that's not sus, I don't know what it is. But again, we're talking about two young men that were broke, trying to break into show business, not having any luck, and they literally get handed the opportunity of a lifetime. I mean, they were in on it. Yeah, they knew about it, but they weren't. They weren't the only ones that should have took any blame. Because I mean, you and I remember that whole shit storm.
Oh yeah, this is actually something that, strangely enough, I have thought about and had a discussion on. Because one, the country was overly harsh on a couple of people that, you know, looking back at it now, were essentially still just kids. Mm-hmm. They were just trying to get by, and they were treated, you know, Bernie Madoff wasn't treated as poorly as the country treated them when that happened.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the biggest shows in the last 15 years or whatever on cable was entirely based on lip syncing with LL Cool J, right?
I love that show. Lip Sync Battle? Yeah.
Yeah. Milli Vanilli is like their, I don't know, godfathers or whatever, right? And then on top of it, they didn't take the heat for it. And I'm not saying they should have, but as you'll recall, there was a similar type of situation with CNC Music Factory.
Yes.
That in all of the videos, they had that thinner lady, and then it turned out that a
full-figured
bigger
lady.
Bone, full-figured lady, yes, was doing all of the singing. Mm-hmm. It, which is funny because at the time, I don't know if you remember this, but people would literally say, she sounds like she has a bigger person's voice. Without being rude or whatever, I don't know if you remember people saying that.
But she has a full-throated voice.
Yeah, they didn't get the flack that Milli Vanilli did.
No.
And that was only a couple years later. I mean, what, 2-3 years after that? But I think looking back on it, we did Milli Vanilli wrong. And then especially knowing where this is going to end up going.
Yeah, yeah. And just for the record, that lady's name was Martha Wash. She was a backup singer for the disco singer Sylvester. You made me feel that song. And then she was one half of the duo called the Weather Girls, who had the Bananas iconic song It's Raining Men.
Uh-huh.
That's her. So yes, she was the lead singer on CNC Music Factory is Gonna Make You Sweat. And I think it was a couple other songs on the album.
Yeah.
And they didn't give her credit.
It was
nonsense. And yeah, she came back hard on that one. They settled it. They settled it. But boy, that was a mess.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, after it came out that she was the actual singer, I think CNC still had another song that charted after that. So people at that point knew that the person in the video was not the singer and it wasn't a thing. Now, I don't think they had any more albums after that that charted, but
I mean, they had maybe one or two, but no, they did not chart. They didn't do well at all. So that was 1990 that she did work with CNC Music Factory. But the year before, she had done work with an Italian group called Black Box. You ever heard of them?
I don't think I have.
If you ever get a chance, try to look them up. They had some they did like a lot of house music.
Okay.
Dance music.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely bananas. I went wild. I wore that tape out. I loved them to death. And she did a lot of lead vocals for a lot of those songs. Everybody, everybody, everybody. You ever heard that one? No?
If I have, I just don't remember it.
Yeah. That was one of the biggest songs that they had. So if you get a chance, try to find the whole album is really good, but she did a lot of singing on that one too. So it wasn't unusual for her to be like a session singer.
Right.
But like I said, CNC jacked it up and actually acted like it wasn't her. Yeah, their fault. Anyway, so as far as Rob and Fab go, Milli Vanilli is no more. And they're trying. They're trying to get it together. VH1, you remember that channel?
Strangely enough, do.
Video Hits One. When they started their Behind the Music series in 1997, Milli Vanilli was the subject of the very first episode. They got together and recorded another album called Back in Attack, but Pilatus had been having a lot of personal issues in the past few years. He struggled with alcohol and drug addiction. He'd been arrested and sentenced to 3 months in jail for robbery and later spent 6 months in rehab. They did manage to get the album finished, but just after he got out of rehab, Pilatus overdosed on alcohol and drugs in a hotel in Frankfurt on April 3rd, 1998. It was ruled accidental. I believe that it was, but I also believe that he took it the hardest when everything fell apart. I really think he did.
I agree with you 100% on that. I think sort of what I was saying, the nation's treatment of him did not help. So the fact that people have turned to drugs for a lot less.
True. And Rob, well, Fab, in documentary, because they're talking about the documentary, a lot of the articles I was looking at, he mentions how he saw how hard it was hitting him because, and he suggested it was had maybe had a lot to do with just how he came up. Like he came from the, even though he was adopted, and then the family he gets adopted into is unhappy, and he was looking for some kind of happiness and
Right.
some kind of love, and they had it, and then it's gone. So that's like the saddest, obviously the saddest part of this whole doggone story. So
Yeah.
they never did release the album. Morvan continued to write and sing, and he took singing lessons, so he got to be a better singer in the meantime. So he's still working. He lives in Amsterdam now. He has a partner and they have 4 kids together, so he's still doing work. Every time I think about the story, I just think about how shitty all this went down. It really was.
I agree with you 100%. The issues that he ended up having, I feel we're responsible for to a certain degree.
John Davis, the singer that did the lyrics for Morvan, he passed away in May of 2021 from COVID.
Interesting.
And Farvin, Far, excuse me, Farian, the producer, he passed away. Let's see. I had it written down. He's passed away in the last few years as well. So, and as far as I've read, he never really did take any serious hit. It wasn't like he did a whole lot of work. After Milli Vanilli, he was still trying to write and produce groups and stuff, but it wasn't, he didn't see a whole lot of success afterwards. And I'm not sad about that because he used them and he used other singers, and
Yeah.
I have nothing for him. I just,
He, you know the joke of they're the real MVP? He was the real villain here.
he really was. He would show Milli Vanilli the media villain, the real villain. Yeah, he was a real villain. Like, how can you blame the group and not blame the producer?
Yeah.
I'm so baffled that he didn't take as much heat
You
as
know,
they
the
did.
guy whose idea it was.
Who had done it before?
Right. But
If
he gets off without any heat.
little to none. Like I said, Rob and Fab claimed, like I said, they felt pressured into staying in it. Because they had signed on the dotted line. But the assistant that thought of the name of the group, she says, nah, they were willing participants the entire time. Yeah, of course she would say that.
Right.
Like, of course. Why wouldn't you back him up? But I'm like, how? Yeah, a matter of fact, I'm sorry. Frank Farian died 2 months ago, in January of 2024. So again, I'm not sad for that.
Yeah, that, you know, once again, of course she's going to say, oh no, they were in on it. They were happy about it. I mean, there's a certain point, though, when you're in the situation that they were in, you have to act like you're happy about it if you want to keep the gig. If you're broke and you're hungry and this is how you're going to make your money, you're going to feign a certain amount of being okay with it to keep the gig going. So.
So even after that all happened, as bad as the kids say, as down bad as they were, they still tried to improve. They still kept trying to go. And a matter of fact, I have a clip of an unreleased song that they did, and I there's no oh I see it was a German television show in 1990. They did a live performance one time only, and they never released the song. They can actually again they can actually sing. So here it is.
All right.
You know what? Go and throw down. You
It's not any worse than any other male-led group that was out at the time.
Right. Yeah,
So,
no.
and considering the fact that they had so much trouble mastering English when they first came stateside, the fact that they sound like this a year later or so, that's impressive. So, like I said, but everybody just kept, they just kept making these two the clowns of the circus, and it's gross. It's just gross. It's gross as hell.
Yeah, and if we're going to be on the subject of lip syncing ruining someone's career, it also happened to Ashley Simpson
Yeah,
on
Saturday
that
Night
whole Saturday Night Live thing when her record skipped or did whatever it was it
Live.
did,
She
and
did
then
the
that poor
little.
girl was doing the song at the Orange Bowl that year, and that didn't go over because that was after the SNL thing. But that completely ruined her career as well. And I mean, I get why you would want to lip sync if you're on SNL, and other artists have done it. So I don't see what the big deal was, just that like people all of a sudden knew about it. But still, what happened to her was nowhere near as bad as what happened to them, but probably because she had a better, had a better way to say it. She probably had a better support system to help her get through that than they had.
Considering how they were already being treated before everything blew up, it's not surprising that they didn't have any support when it all went down. It's not surprising at all. So, like I said, that's just. I don't know that there's been, I don't know that there's been any really huge quote unquote scandal like that in the music industry, specifically like that since.
Yeah, that one's definitely unique,
It is.
for lack of a better term.
It is. And it's just, and another layer that I want to mention, and it's kind of obvious, unfortunately, is just how some people just have a pathology of having to use Black folks and other people of color to their own benefit.
Yeah, odd how that keeps happening.
And that,
Every time I see something like that, I'm just shocked and stunned.
it's done. And then there are those who willingly play puppets for the establishment and get dropped, kicked right out of their jobs. I'm looking at you, Candace Owens. Anyway, her I am not sad about. Okay, but there it is. That's the story. That's the story of Milli Vanilli. The
Yeah.
scandalized group from the 80s, who really were a couple of good looking men. As a matter of fact, Fab still looks pretty good. So I wasn't mad at him at all. And we weren't mad, a lot of us were not mad at the spandex pants. It might have been a little corny, but we weren't entirely mad. And I had the freaking album. I did. I had at least, I think I had at least the cassette single. Remember they did cassette singles. I had at least that.
Yeah, I had it on cassette single. I'm not gonna lie. I think it was that one, and then Blame It on the Rain,
That was my favorite. Blame It on the Rain was my favorite.
which of course I always sang it as Blame It on Lorraine. That damn Lorraine. Such a,
that's the sad story of Milli Vanilli. And listening, friends, if you get the chance, check out the latest documentary. I'll include the link in our show description. Check that out.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, that just goes to show that if something sort of like that happens, and again, and the people are, you know, in their 20s, maybe we should give them a little bit of grace and cut them some slack, because they're probably getting taken advantage of. And even though they're doing the thing and they knew about the thing, they're still young and getting taken advantage of.
I'll tell you another related story that it's been rumored, but I think it's more fact than rumor at this point. Bobby Brown's Every Little Step, he was having some issues with substance abuse for some years. And rumor slash fact has it that, especially during the chorus, it was actually Ralph Tresvant doing the singing because Bobby couldn't have it.
Bobby was having a little
Oof.
sobriety issue.
Yeah, but if you listen to the song close enough, you can kind of hear Ralph, underneath it, not just doing backings, but you can hear it. So I think there's more fact to it than rumor.
Than not.
I don't know that Bobby is ever, or Bobby or Ralph has ever confirmed, but things like this have happened where you had somebody else step in, but it was all knowingly. But
Yeah.
yeah, something like this. when you got, artists trying to make it and they sign on the dotted line and they don't do themselves a favor of reading or at least getting legal representation. Same thing happened to TLC. They signed on the dotted line and then, watched as pretty much every dime they made got snatched. And they said, oops, you signed this contract up. Okay.
Yeah, I can't. Don't quote me on this. It may be Motley Crue that this happened to. But when they were signed, they didn't realize that, like, that they didn't own the rights to their songs. And then there was some point in the future where they ended up getting them back. But I mean, the same thing happened with Taylor Swift. That's why, what was it, 2-3 years ago, she re-recorded all of her albums because the same thing happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, that was before, she became an operative of the deep state to, help get Trump not elected,
Yeah, plant, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's so many artists, like even like you said, established artists that have fought in recent years to get the rights and the masters back from their own dang songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wild. It's wild. Who recently did that? Anita Baker did that recently, where she was fighting to get her masters back. And I love me some Anita Baker. I heard she's a little bit of a diva, but hey, it's all right. She asked the fans, don't listen to my stuff on the streaming because they're not paying me for this. And when I heard she got her rights back, I proceeded to listen to her again. I'm like, they're not going to play with my favorites like this. They're just not.
I mean, it's like we were talking about, I don't remember which episode, recently in the musical March, but during COVID, the guy that was the bass player for X singer, I don't remember, wanted to teach people how to play all of his songs. And so he was putting on a class and the record company was blocking him and wouldn't let him do it because they owned the rights to the songs. And he's like, I wrote the songs.
Mm-hmm. They're like, so what?
Yeah, basically, they're like, yeah, we don't care. You can't play these. So, yeah.
The music industry business is shady, to quote Q-Tip. Or to paraphrase Q-Tip, there have been, when I was much younger, I used to dream of a career somewhere in show business, and I'm so glad I never tried to do that, because no. No.
Yeah. On the surface, it sounds good, but sort of the more you look in, you see a lot of things. That's a good way to have a lot of problems the rest of your life.
Indeed. Indeed.
I have enough of them not being famous or a celebrity, right?
Like, I don't know if you've heard about it. I don't know if you watched it. Quiet on Set, the Nickelodeon documentary.
Yeah, I went to watch it, and then I ended up watching the first 3 episodes of Bass Reeves instead.
Oh, okay. Ooh, boy,
the two are such similar content, right?
Oh, yeah, aren't they? Oh, and I checked out an audiobook about Bass Reeves, too. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'll let you know. But yeah. Remember,
real quick, when we did our episode on him, how we talked about how he was known as a man of little words, a few words. Watching that show, I'm like, it is difficult to base a series around a guy that does not talk much.
That's why it's, when it's history that old, you could do some, what do they call it? Artistic license. Yeah, take some artistic license with it. What he may have said.
Yeah, if he actually, spoke, this is what he would have said.
We believe based on XYZ. So, depending on who the person is and how good the writers are, you can get away with it and make it believable. But sometimes they do fall short of the mark.
Yeah.
But I brought up the Nickelodeon documentary talking about how, show business is a bitch. And it's a special bitch for children who, in this case, were too young to legally represent themselves. And they got the shaft, no pun intended, Lord have mercy, from a lot of adults.
Yep.
Including their own parents. So there it is, the ugly side of show business. Always read your contracts, folks. Always.
Yeah. Make sure you have a good attorney.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. And that's the story, listening friends of Robin Fab.
Mainly. Yeah. Definitely not a good story of, I don't know, what would you call it? Hollywood show business, whatever. It is a tragedy, whether I think maybe enough time has gone on that people will recognize it as the tragedy it is.
I think it got as much attention as it did because of the documentary coming that came out last year. So,
yeah,
as long as it gets the right amount of attention, because there's no reason to make this into a huge joke anymore. I mean, you just, no.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think it's time that, I mean, should they get their Grammys back? Probably not. But do we owe them an apology as a whole? I think we do.
Yeah.
So,
and I doubt they ever got one from the people that made this possible. So
yeah. So Millie Vanilli, on behalf of Kenyatta and Jack Save the World, I would like to offer you our heartfelt apology for treating you like shit back in the day.
We're speaking collectively for the world. So yeah. And I still like Blame It on the Rain. I don't care. So
that's the thing. I still think it's an alright song.
It's a good song. Come on.
One of the channels that plays 80 music here in OKC, I've heard them play Milli Vanilli a couple times since then, which I thought was kind of a cool deal that they were getting a little bit of airplay.
Yeah. But, interesting. Yeah. But there it is. There's the story. Like
there
I said,
it goes.
You always read your contracts. Always, always, always. And if anybody ever says, we're only going to do this for the first album, don't believe them.
It's a lie.
Music executives are shady. But do you know it's not shady? Us. Jack, do you want to tell them how they can help?
That's right. If you would like to purchase us a coffee on buymeacoffee.com/hyperfocuspods, we would love it. And, you know, we would drink that coffee under a nice shade tree. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the kind of shade we like. And with that, my friends, we'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah, dude.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.